is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show. This session shares my conversation with candidate for school committee, Al Charles. This is one of a series of conversations with candidates for the Franklin election on November 2nd, 2021. I do this to provide Franklin, Mass. Voters with accurate and timely information that they can use to cast an informed vote. Publication of the answers or interview responses does not constitute an endorsement of this or any candidate. We cover the candidate questions as previously developed in conjunction with you, the community, and shared with the candidates in advance. Five of the questions are general in nature. The sixth is specific to the role of the candidate, in this case, for the school committee. Our conversation runs about 40 minutes. Slow assistance, my interview with Al Charles. Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, anywhere on the internet at WFPR.FM in your internet browser, or on the FM dial in the local Franklin area at network at 102.9. Here for another candidate interview session for school committee, in this case, with Al Charles. Al, good evening and welcome.
Well, thanks for having me, Steve.
We want to, as people have been listening, and for the new folks, I hope you continue to go through the series. For those who have been listening, this is another one in the series to, you know, get your story out to the Franklin voters so that we can be prepared when the election comes November 2nd. And Chloe will throw some reminders in around last day to vote and yada, yada, yada. But in the meantime, if by chance they don't know Al, who's Al? Who's Al Charles? Oh, he's a candidate. What is he about? Let's just start. What is your Franklin story? Tell us a little bit about your life here.
Sure, I'd love to share. So, first of all, I've been married to my wife, Thea, for 13 years, and that's actually where my Franklin story starts. Actually, the night before that we got married, my groomsmen and I, we had stayed at the residence inn in Forge Park. And the funny part about this was that I had no idea where I was at. It was, you know, off 495 at the hotel, and we're getting married in Woonsocket. So it was the closest place in Massachusetts, at least. And my youngest brother, Jimmy, who's one of my groomsmen, had said to me, "I don't have socks." You know, the night before my wedding, you know, he doesn't have black socks. And I'm just like, what is going on? You know, and I'm like panicking because, you know, I have no idea where I'm at. I had gone off 495, turned right, went up the hill and saw nothing. So I'm like, there is nothing out here. So I called Thea and I'm like, "Hey, he doesn't have socks. He forgot them, and we lived at Lowell, so it was like, we're not going back home."
No, that's too far.
Yeah, exactly. So, and Thea and her family, they live in Millville, so she was familiar with the area, and she had said, "Just calm down, drive across 495, there are stores there." And I'm just like, "Okay, sure." She's like, "There's a Marshall," I'm like, "There's nothing." So I drove down across the 495 and the plaza's there, Franklin Village, you know?
Yep.
And lo and behold, we got the socks at Marshall's and crisis averted. And I had no idea of Franklin before. And little did I know, a year later, we would be looking for houses and we'd find a home in Franklin. That's a cool story. Yeah. I didn't even know it was Franklin until looking back at old emails and I saw the email for the receipt for the Residence Inn. And I'm like, "Oh, this was Franklin." So
it
was,
I've been here before.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where we started. So we've been here for 12 years now, and we have two boys, Owen, who is turning 11, and Chris, who's 8. They both go to Keller. One of the things that made us choose Franklin as a community was that when we were living in Brighton, and we're looking for a house, and we looked in the city first and foremost. You know, you're young and we want to stay close to the city. Mm-hmm. And the things that we could find within our budgets were like a shoebox, you know,
yeah.
Small, no parking. And I had my car. Thea didn't have a car at the time. She took the commuter rail. And they're like, "You know what? Do we even use the city anymore?" "No." So let's look elsewhere. Look for, you know, some place that's bigger, you know, more space, more value. Where could we look? And at the time, like I said, Thea was in Boston. I worked in Chelmsford and her family was in Millville. So, and my family was in Lowell. So it was like, all right, well, where can we go that's kind of equidistant everywhere? And when we're looking, Franklin hit the mark. You know, we had the two commuter rail lines. So Thea could go to Boston really quick, easing out. I could go up to Chelmsford, up 495, and back, and it was opposite of traffic. So, you know, early enough, it was great. And then it was all just convenient. So that first hit the mark. Then we're looking for the size and the property and the land, and that was perfect as well. And at the time, we weren't, you know, we were only married for a year at the time. So we weren't really thinking about children, but it was like, you know, let's look at the schools. And that was awesome as well. And Theo was familiar with Franklin, being from Millville before. So that was just like, all right, check the box. The other thing that was important to me was that as a kid, I moved all over the place. I lived in Mass almost all my life, but I lived in one place no more than like 7 years. So like I lived in Waltham, I lived in Lowell, and then with Thea in Brighton for a few years. So my thought was, you know, wherever I go, I want to be there for the long haul. I wanted to be someplace that I could say, this is where I'm from, because I've never had personally that opportunity to say, I'm from so-and-so, you know, didn't have the roots, and I wanted my boys to say, I'm from Franklin. And it's been a great 12 years, and I'm glad that they can say that I'm from Franklin, you know, and that's what they know and what they've grown up with. So that's me, like, before and up to having kids.
The short story.
Yeah. Once we had kids, though, things like changed. Like my roots got really, really deep in Franklin, because the boys, you know, they started school, they started sports. So I started doing the dad things, like coaching basketball, coaching baseball, coaching soccer, volunteering. When they were in school, they were doing school reading workshops and math workshops in the classrooms. And I was like, yep, sign me up. I'll go and help out there. During Teacher Appreciation Week, they did, you know, they asked parents to cover lunch and recess duties so the teachers would get breaks. So I came in and helped out there. And it was cool because you could see like the kids there. And it was funny because I coached some of the kids and they're like, hey, you're a coach.
Hey.
You know, so it all like connected. So, which was cool. And then last year, I was able to do some more because, you know, COVID stopped me from having to travel for work. And I didn't have to commute to Chelmsford anymore, and it was all remote.
That saves a bunch of time right there.
Exactly, and gas, because I was spending like, I was filling up my tank like 3 times a week. So it was ridiculous. So it's definitely a godsend there. But what I was able to do is, when they went back to school, they asked for help to set up the laptop charging stations. So I went in for a day, helped set up some machines, and, you know, helped out there. And then in the evenings, I had joined the Keller Parent Communication Council and led 2 subcommittees, one for fundraising and one for the directory, and then just helped out as support on the third. So I was able to just go in and just really just help out and it just really, you know, get to know the school, the parents, and just really build the roots that I've done. And then extracurricular wise, the boys have been playing piano since they've been both 18 months old at FSPA. So we've been spending a lot of time, with the exception of last year, downtown on Main Street. And it's really been our second home. Like we've gone from like 1 day a week there to now we're there at least 3 days a week. So,
okay. As opposed to living there, but this, yeah.
Exactly. It's close enough, you know? So it's our second home. And I think like, I'm glad that like Franklin afforded us all of these opportunities, because I mean, I'm not a musician, but I admire it, and piano's been my favorite instrument. So it's a blast to see my boys learn that and be able to do that in town. That's my story.
Good. And if while you were talking, if I did the math properly, you can check. So this is now the place you've lived the longest?
Yeah, it's
cool.
Yeah, exactly. So I can say I'm from Franklin now. So it's been nice.
Indeed. I'm a couple of years away. I spent most of my growing up years in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, but I'm a couple of years away to passing Pawtucket. So Franklin will be the new one for me.
Exactly.
Okay, so that was good. And as we're gearing for the election, we'll segue into the second question. And for those listening for the first time, we have a set of 5 standard questions, if you will, across all the candidates. And then the 6th and final question effectively is for the role the candidate is for. Anyway, for those listening, you can tune out for the next 30 seconds while I say the question to Al, and then you can tune back. So participating in elections is one of the key freedoms of American life, and voting is one of those primary responsibilities of citizens. Not the only one, but it's certainly a primary one. While the law does not require citizens to vote, voting is a very important part of any democracy. So what can you tell us about your own voting record? And if you've not been active, just tell us why. Because I think the real question we're trying to get at is what your thoughts are in terms of, should we elect people who are active participants in the election process?
So for me, as soon as I turned 18 and being eligible to vote, I had voted in every single national election that has come up since. I'm definitely active there. When it came to the local level, not so much, at the beginning anyway.
Well, you moved around a bunch too. That helped.
Exactly. And voting locally in Boston, when we're there, So, but when I came to Franklin, when we purchased our house, that's really when I started to vote in local elections for the first time. It wasn't, I would say, the best experience because, one, I didn't know who the candidates were or even what they stood for. So it was like the week leading up to election or even the night before, I'm like reading whatever I can find. It's like, all right, this person seems good. And I don't know. And looking back at some of the votes that the people I voted for, I like, maybe I shouldn't have done that. So at the beginning, it was definitely a challenge, and it was a growing experience to vote locally. The one that really kind of turned the corner was when we had the high school override vote. That's the one I really was kind of like, all right, what's going on? How does this impact us? You know, because at that time, I think it was maybe 2012?
I believe so. Yeah, 2012. Yeah, because the school opened in 14.
Yeah. So Owen was going to be turning two, and it's like, all right, well, we're going to be here for the long haul. I need to understand, how does this impact us, and does it make sense? And for me, I was like, yep, all in for a new school because, technology has changed, and it would be great to say, I'm older than my school. I've never had that ability. So it's like, so that was one thing that was like, all right, great. Let's go all in. But since then, I've been keeping tabs of what's going on, watching local town council meetings when I can, heavily involved in the school committee meetings just to really get a sense of, why should I vote the way I should, and really be at peace with the votes that I make. So that's been my voting experience. As far as our elected officials voting, yes, it's a plus. I wouldn't say it's mandatory. What I would say is their knowledge of how local government works. I think we have people that will go in because they want to change something, but they have no idea how things operate. So I think even if you don't vote, you need to know how government works so that then when you do come into it, you can be effective. Because yes, it's a 2-year term. It's a lot to learn, and whatever you do will be longstanding more than that 2 years. So I know I've been doing my due diligence, and I hope that my peers that are running also have done theirs and are prepared.
Thank you for that. So segueing into kind of more of a broader issue to the pandemic that unfortunately has affected many of us, some in more direct ways than others. But one of the key questions around is, have you been vaccinated for COVID-19? Do you think there should be a mask mandate if necessary? And finally, the real key question, I think, is, what role or measures should government take to protect the public from this virus or the next one, whatever? And how should those efforts be delineated between local, state, and federal governments? And I know it's a mouthful, but that's what it is.
Yep, understood. So as far as my vaccination status, yes, I'm vaccinated. Both Thea and I have been vaccinated since we both were eligible back in April. So we had both of our shots, took the time off of work to get that done, and we're now protected, and we will help at least reduce the spread of the virus. As far as a mask mandate, I think we can't look at Franklin as its own individual entity. I mean, we have people in Franklin that, you know, yes, you live in Franklin, but you work elsewhere. You know, you may travel across the state, you may travel across the country, may even travel internationally in some extent. And then we also have people that are coming in here, working and, you know, interacting with us. So if the government says, yes, we should have a mask mandate, it should be across the board. Because at the end of the day, the phrase goes, you know, you're only as strong as your weakest link. And if Franklin is saying, you know, no, we're not doing the mask, we could be the genesis of it spreading, or places that are not wearing masks could be the genesis of it spreading. So it's I don't think we can just be specific to Franklin of yay or nay. It should be collective across the board. I mean, I find it very awkward in stores, because you go to some stores, it's like, yes, mask, other stores, no. And it's just like, well, you can't, it just be consistent across the board.
Yeah, it would make it a heck of a lot easier. I agree.
Exactly.
And I understand the situation we're in, but yeah.
Exactly. As far as the delineating local, state and federal government in terms of how we handle this, I think it's the same. We have to be consistent. We have to defer to the medical experts that, you know, this is their livelihood. They've gone to higher education specifically for this. They are the experts in their field. And I think we need to heed their warning. And I can't pretend to be a doctor and tell you what to do. So I'm going to listen to the doctors and follow their guidance. And if they say that, you know, we need to wear masks to protect folks, then we do so. We need to take vaccines to do so. We've been doing this for countless of years and other things. I mean, I've had all my vaccines because the doctors have said that. So why am I going to change my stance now? You know, consistent.
So stepping into a bit more of a broader overall Franklin, but you can certainly answer within the school framework if you choose. What are the three important factors you believe are needed to move Franklin forward?
So I think the three important factors are one, education, two, communication, and three, inclusion. So when I say education, education around local government, I don't think people understand how powerful they are when it comes to local government. Your voice is very immense, and people don't use it, and they don't use it in the right, and if they do use it, they don't use it in the right places. And then also they don't understand how impactful local government is compared to the state or federal, because it's not getting the same level of publicity and airtime. I think we need to do better job educating people, because once again, people don't know. A few years ago, I think it was September of 2019, they had the town hall civics event at the
Box. Town Government 101.
Exactly. And I had gone there and I was surprised. I was like probably the youngest person there, but it was a great session. You know, we had representation from every group talking about what they did. And I mean, it was cool because at the time, you know, I knew some things, but not all. And the groups that I didn't know, like the Board of Assessors, it was like, okay, well, what do you do? And I found that out and why it's important. So that's something I think we need to do, because the more people know about town government, the more that they're like, all right, well, this is how we drive change and this is how we improve things. I think if we could get something like that back again, every 2 years, maybe like 6 months before an election, just to kind of re-energize people and say, hey, this is up on the ballot and what they do and why it's important, so that people can go to the polls and make educated decisions versus, well, you know, I saw this sign, or it's changed from a, not sort of popularity conscious, but it's not, it's more educated versus majority rules.
Correct. Yeah, so I know. Clearly, COVID had impact the planning on that. I'm hopeful that, yes, we come back to extend to the 102, 103, whatever the concept is, and whether we do it on a periodic basis or themed basis. I think, from my perspective, at least learning what I've learned in the 15 years of me doing this, there is so much to share and to engage folks with. And when you start peeling back the onion, it just gets more interesting to a certain extent. And granted, I don't expect everybody to go behind some of the scenes on some of the topics, but the town covers so much. There's going to be something in there for someone, so to speak. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it was great to like interact with Jamie Helen, because I think that was the first time I've interacted with, like, in person. It was, you know, on TV before, and it was just like, you know, this guy, I enjoy what he's doing and his vision, and I felt safe in his hands and under his leadership. So that's the first one. The second one is, as I said before, is communication. I think we need to get the word out more. People are in their own bubbles. And I can think back when I first came in, I knew nothing of what's going on. And I didn't know where to look. And I didn't know where the resources were. So if I didn't know the town had a website, you know, I would have never found things out. And sometimes people, if you don't know, you don't look.
Yep.
So I think we need to do a better job of getting the information to where people go. So it could be something as working with the local businesses and having signage about, you know, a budget meeting. So, you know, you're going out to get some pizza and you're paying at the counter and you see the sign budget meeting, you know, Wednesday at 7 p.m. And you're like, oh, you know what? Let me check that out, you know, or where most people are on Facebook today, making sure that where people go are updated. Like I've been trying to keep tabs with the school committee website, Facebook page. But I don't know if you've noticed, but the last time it's been updated was June 9th. So there's been a lot going on since between June 9th and now, and there hasn't been any updates. I mean, last night, you know, Dr. Hearn had her school presentation to the town council. Yep. Something like that would have been a great resource to put on Facebook. And any other avenue so that people could easily find it. You know, they may not be looking for it, but they're in that platform. They stumble upon it. It's like, ooh, what's this? Mm-hmm. And then really just kind of get engaged a little bit more.
Sure.
So that's with communication. As far as inclusion, really allowing people to participate more. With pandemic, I think we've had a lot of blessings in disguise in the name of Zoom. I think everybody knows that word. The company is it's akin to Google and Googling somebody, you know, regardless of you're using Zoom, Teams, Skype, whatever, it's Zoom, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's been great because, you know, we can now participate in person. And yes, you could have done it on TV before, but the thing is with Zoom is now you're seeing who's on and you can be like, you know, I'm here one of, you know, 50 people and
sure.
He's all
or one of 400.
Exactly. You know, and it expanded the scope of what we could have done because, you know, the town council halls are only so big.
Absolutely. Yeah. When the school committee had the 400 on the one meeting that I definitely recall thinking of the council chambers, which I was usually in, and in many cases, the only person other than the school administration and the school committee, it only fits 70, 75. If you're standing maybe 80 or 90, that 400 would never have fit.
Yeah, exactly. So I think allowing people to participate better because with the Zoom meetings, you could, you know, speak if you needed to speak, and it opened up avenues that people didn't have. Mm-hmm. This past year, I've seen more people speak than I have in the past, which has been great. And then also, it just kind of, the more you see people on, the more you come back. It's like talking about something on Netflix. You know, you see all these people talking about it, let me check it out. So we keep on coming back. So I think that helps. And then it just expands the scope because, I mean, there have been times that, you know, we're at home, and Thea's watching it on TV. I'm downstairs on my phone watching it, and it just makes it a lot more convenient and accessible. So yes. I think making inclusiveness in that sense. And then also just doing more things like the plan together website, where you can report, you know, what you want to change in the roadways. I think that's a great invention and a great tool because for me, I'm at church. When I go to Church Square and turn onto Lincoln Street, since I've lived here, I've been saying, you know what, we need a green turn light here because it's a mess, you know. And I have never, and I've like thought, you know, I'll email the town council, I'll go in person, but I've never actually done it. But as soon as I saw that Plan Together website, I was like, the first thing I did was like, this needs a green turn light and here, and here, you know, and I just like went to town and threw all this feedback that I could because it was easy, it was simple, it was right at my fingertips. And I didn't have to just think about it or come back to it later. It was just, it was right there. So
yeah.
I think if we do more things like that to allow people to be, to feel involved, they'll participate more. And you get them to start one avenue, it's going to spread. I've been focusing on school committee because of my boys, but because of school committee, I'm now watching more of town council, and Thea has been watching the planning board, oddly enough. She's like, this is really good stuff. And I'm like, okay. So, you know, you kind of, it just, it propagates. So it's sure. really cool. So those three things, like I said, education, communication, and inclusion.
Thank you for that. And the fifth and final of the standard set, if you will, what experience or background will help you serve in this role? Or another way to phrasing is, what do you bring to the table that would help set you apart from the others?
So, well, what I can bring to the table is that I'm a person that brings people together. That's what I do at work. I'm a deployment manager. And the goal, my role is, I've given a project, and at the end of the day, I have to get to that goal. And it requires multiple people from different departments to come together and make it happen. And although that we're in the same company, each group that I'm bringing has a different priority. And it's like, they're not aligned. And you would think that, you know, we're all aligned, it's march to the goal, and it's not the case. And it's a lot of horse trading, borrowing, talking through. And I've spent a lot of time really learning to listen to people and work and take their feedback and really be cognizant of what's important to them, so that as we work towards the end goal, I am able to tweak what I'm doing and tweak what needs to be done so that it accounts for their needs. And we get to the end goal, but how we got there may not have been initially how we visioned it. You know, it may not be a straight arrow, but we've covered what needs to be cared for. And it satisfies the larger body. So that's one thing. As a person, I'm firm, but I'm also flexible. I am one that I don't necessarily have the ego to say it's my way, the highway. I can easily admit that, you know, yep, I'm wrong. It may take a bit, and like, you know, I may need to sleep on it or just walk away and come back. But I if I'm wrong, I will definitely admit that I'm wrong. And I've seen that in my campaign so far. When I first started, all I had was a Facebook presence. I had the Facebook page, and it was like, if you want to learn about me, go to Facebook. You know, and that was the quick, easy, and in my comfort area, being just, you know, on the platform. But a woman had emailed me and said, "Hey, Al, how do I learn more about you?" So I was like, "All right, yep, I have a Facebook page. Here's the link. Check it out." And her response was, "Okay, looks like everybody has one now. I'll check it out." And the response wasn't bad, but it didn't land like, okay, this is where she wanted to find out about
me. Right.
Yeah. So I was like, you know, I paused, I took a bit, and I was like, all right, I need to care for other people. So I had created alcharlesfsc.com for those that don't use Facebook as another alternative. And I'd emailed her back and I was like, "Hey, here's my link. Thanks for the feedback." You know, it wasn't direct feedback, but it was feedback nonetheless.
Yes.
And, you know, here's the link, share it with your friends. And I, you know, then posted on my Facebook page and was like, "Hey, here you go." Cause I mean, I know, I don't know all the answers. If anybody tells you that, they're a liar. And I am willing to take what people say and really take it and run with it and tweak my path. So that was there. And then I think lastly, I get the most out of people. So I mentioned I worked on the PCC. I chaired two committees. One of them was the Keller No Effort Fundraising Committee, where this was a committee where it's fundraising, but it's not your typical fundraising where you're selling stuff it's really just all the kind of behind the scenes things that you can raise money. So, you know, tying to Amazon, that if you buy something, you get it back.
Yeah.
So it was really, like I said, no effort. And when we started, they're like, "All right, your goal for the year is $500, right?" And I'm like, "All right, it's $500. It's the pandemic. Fine. You're giving us a softball." But I was able to pull the the parents together that had volunteered and listened to their ideas and gave them the comfort that, you know, run with it, make it happen, use your strengths and just, you know, we'll support you. And come the end of the year, we ended up raising $4,000. Yeah. So needless to say, they've asked me and my co-chair to come back this year, but they were like, please don't say it's a $4,000 goal. So it's been good. And as you can see, I didn't do the work, but people were comfortable enough to say, you know, I'm not stifled by, it has to be Al's way. We can do it however we want. He supports mm-hmm. us and, you know, magic happens. So, so I think those are the things that I can bring to the table, especially where, when it comes to your children, everybody has their perspectives and everybody wants to hear their voice. And we need to hear everybody's voices.
Because the kids are important.
Yes.
Thank you for that. And then the final one focused specifically on the school committee. And by the conversation so far, I know it sounds like you've been preparing for it. So while the Franklin Public School District manages the largest portion of Franklin as a town's budget, what are your ideas to help solve the structural deficit in the operating budget we have?
Yeah, so this is definitely a tough one because we didn't get into this situation overnight. I mean, it's been multiple years. It's just a snowball effect. And like snowballs, they start off small, and as the longer they go, they get bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. So there is no simple and easy answer to this. Nope. What I do know is that, I mean, what we get for funding today from the state is not going to increase, you know? And unless things change at the state level, the solution has to come from the Franklin residents. You know, we have to figure it out. We have mm-hmm. to solve our own path and create our own solution. I think what we need to do as residents is identify what's important to us, what's our priority, and what do we want to see? Because over the past few years, we've seen a few different things that have been very sad. We've seen teachers line up on 140, pleading for their jobs and saying, save us, you know. We've seen students go to student school council meetings saying how much important chorus is. And it shouldn't come to that, you know. It shouldn't be that people are begging and trying to pull on heartstrings for us to do what's right. Mm-hmm. And I don't want that for Franklin. I don't want us to be in that situation. What I want us to do in Franklin is I want us to be able to be a place where any teacher that works here can say, I'm confident and comfortable in my stability in Franklin and the Franklin School District. You know, if I choose to be a Franklin teacher for the next 30 years, I can do so, you know, as long as I'm continuing to perform and do well. I'm not having to worry about, you know, is this my last year and do I need to look elsewhere? Because, you know, like me, I want to be here for a long time. And then with the students, I want the students to be able to get all of the extracurricular activities beyond just, you know, what they learn in the classroom. You know, I want them to be able to have the ability to learn the arts, additional sciences, take advantage of the things that we've done with the digital learning integrationists with the makerspace and learn STEM at a young age and be exposed to all these different things. I want them to have the opportunity to do what they do at the high school, at the science nights, where they can show off the robots that they've built and mm-hmm. and the ecosystems and bring that to younger kids, because at this age is where they can see all the things that they can do and kind of figure out, well, I really like this and I want to go into that path. So that's what I want to see. But I think it comes down to the residents to say, you know, what's important to us. And to do that, I think we can do it multiple different ways. We can go in and we can look at what we're spending on today and see, is there something that's wasteful? Because like right now, we close schools and we just, you know, Davis there and Keller just combined. But we have children that are closer to Parmenter that are being bused over to Keller. And does that make sense? You know, can we revisit the planning and say, okay, well, if we restructure things, our busing costs are less. So then we're saving money there, you know, and we're being smart with the money that we have. So I think that's the first thing to do is look at that. You know, can we spend more money now to save money down the road? You know, the digital learning integrationists, when that came up, I know there was contention, like, why do we need that? And this was before pandemic, right? But now that we talk about it post-pandemic, we hear that these educators were a godsend because they helped ease the transition to this new digital world. They were the experts on the Google Suites. They helped train the teachers. They helped troubleshoot. They made things easier so that our teachers could focus on our children versus focusing on how to teach and how to use the technology and the tools, you know? So I think like that's a perfect example of spending money to save, you know, down the road. Because I can tell you, if the teachers had to do both, I mean, would there be more teachers leaving because of all of the new complex technology? Do we really prioritize our teachers? You know, I see people, you know, when the teachers were there on 140, people were honking and saying, yep, save the teachers. But are we able to pitch in a little bit to save those teachers and say, you know what, if I give a little bit more, will this save the teachers? Because I don't think when people talk about taxes, I don't think people realize we have really, really good in Franklin. Our tax rate is what, $14.65.
And it's one of the lower ones for sure. Yeah.
It's for both residential and commercial. And I was like looking into like this, you know, in preparation, and I looked at, you know, Norfolk, Medway, Milford, Rentham, Bellingham, and Foxborough, just to see like how do we compare to our surrounding towns? And we were the second to lowest residential tax rate out of all of those six. And then when it came to commercial, we were the lowest out of all of them. So it's not like we're competitively priced. I mean, the businesses and our tax rates are more than generous. But at the same time, when we looked at the spending, we were spending the second to lowest on our students compared to those six towns. So, like, I think if it's truly important to us, I think we need to say, let's give a little bit to help out and go a long way. But this, I think, comes back to where education comes into play, because I think our citizens need to know that they need to, you know, put pressure on our local town councilors to really support this. Because yes, the schools can say, yes, we want more money. But if the people don't, it's not going to go anywhere, you know?
No. So, it takes two to tango for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So we need to get the people in to say, yes, we are okay with doing this so that it does go up to ballot or we do make changes, because it's not just going to help the schools. It's going to help all of Franklin. It's going to help the fire department. It's going to help the police department. It's going to help any other local needs that we have that have been kind of put aside and said, you know what, we have bigger things to handle, and you can, you know, limp along a little bit. But I think if we continue to limp along in those places, just like, you know, and he's getting braces, unfortunately. it's like if we wait, the braces cost, you know, let's just say $4,000 now. If we wait until he's, you know, 13, 14, like, well, yeah, now the braces cost 10. Saved it then, but I'm not saving it now. So I don't want to see Franklin in the place where we've reduced we didn't spend the money now. And when we have to spend the money, it's now this huge jump, and it's now more devastating and more impactful. And you know, people that are moving in are saying, you know, I'm not moving to Franklin because they're going from $14.65 to $21. It's that, you know, versus a little to get us a long way.
Well, thank you for answering all the questions. Is there, since we've covered at least the range, is there something else that we haven't covered that you'd like to leave with the voters and residents to remember before November 2nd?
I've shared that I'm a dad, and I think that's what drives me, is I want to do the best for my kid. I think just like any other parent out there. And the energy that I'm putting in this is for my kid, but children, and also for everyone's children out there as well. Because I know this is bigger than me. This is something that will impact their lives for the long haul. And I want to be in Franklin for the long haul, and I want to be able to help move us in the right direction and make it so that people want to come to Franklin and be here for the long haul and contribute. So that's in a nutshell. But I hope that, you know, folks come out to vote on November 2nd, or, you know, do early ballots or mail it in, however they can get to us. And I'll be at the polls waving at people and hoping that I've earned your vote on that day. So thank you.
Indeed. Well, thank you for taking time. And yeah, to put the reminder for the folks listening, either the new folks that are regulars, you've heard it before, but it's still worth listening to, especially if they're new ones. Yeah, the October 13th is the deadline to register for vote if you have not already registered. Applications for both the absentee ballot and the vote by mail are available now. The ballots should be available probably in a week or so as we record this, but there'll be additional information once those are delivered to the town clerk's office. There is an early vote in person in the town clerk's office on the 23rd and 24th from 10 a.m. to 1. And then, of course, the in-person from 6 a.m. through 8 p.m. at the high school for all precincts. So I thank all the listeners for participating. In the show notes, we'll have the links to Al's page and contact info. So if you have any other questions, you can reach out directly to him or come through me. I'll facilitate that discussion as well. We want to make sure you are informed as you get to the polls. So thank you all for listening. And until next time. Franklin Matters.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.